your favorite cartoon characters will help you understand how drugs and alcohol can ruin your life. So watch the program. Talk about it with your family.
Make the right
Hi everyone, welcome to Special Presentation with Mike and Ethan.
Or
Elf will not be seen tonight.
A couple of years ago, Mike and I took a very hard look at a movie that Mike and I had both grown up with and loved, The Phantom Tollbooth. Now, have you ever imagined what it would be like if they decided to make The Phantom Tollbooth the series? It would sound a lot like this, but probably not look like it.
Yeah, that is, I think, the kindest introduction you can give to the thing that we're looking at today.
Yes. We found the two existing episodes of a show that was created basically by Michael Eisner and Chuck Jones within an attempt to compete with the then nascent but rising to superstardom Sesame Street. This show is called Curiosity Shop, and it certainly is a curiosity.
Yeah, it is. Now, apparently, when the series ended, they just destroyed all the copies for reasons.
Yeah, it's like Doctor Who, right?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was like, what do they think? They're the BBC? Like, fucking Michael Eisner's like, we need the tape. Just erase it all. We're going to record over.
That was such a thing that they did, because the film was so hard to get at that time that they just, anything that they weren't going to be using again, they'd tape over. Like, oh, what's his name? Stan Freberg? Stan Freberg did a animation that was specifically meant to be shown to the astronauts on the moon as a sort of, you know, here's something to watch while you decompress after your ride. And it's lost now. They just degased the tape because the astronauts never watched it. They were like, no, we're feeling good. We want to go out now.
Wait a minute. Wait, I'm sorry. Are you telling me that they were like, hey, astronauts, you might need some time to, you know, I know you're in space. And, you know, there's the moon, and you're probably pretty eager to get out of the moon, on the moon. But first, we want you to watch this cartoon.
You know, I mean, it's like when you go to the movies, you got to start with a cartoon, right?
I mean, in a just world, we would still get cartoons before movies.
Yeah.
But no, now all you get is the fucking that thing where some celebrity lady tries to say, like, hey, look, search for the missing Coke bottles in this thing, come early next time for more of the 20, and then you get to see the Marine recruitment ad where they're like, would you like to live in a Dungeons & Dragons game and fight the Balrog? Be a Marine. It's the exact same thing. And then then they try to sell you like a bunch of apps, and then like Matt Damon comes out and says, you know what, crypto, it's the future, put all your money into the crypto, do it now. And if you're like me, you're like, oh shit, I better do that, Matt Damon said so. He's never wrong. Anyway, that's the fucking movies for you these days. Don't go to the movies, they suck. But
oh, don't forget the part where they show what looks like a preview, but then it turns out it's an ad for M&M's, but then it turns out it's actually them telling you to turn off your phone.
I can't believe that, like, they've privatized the phone PSAs now, where it's like, oh, it's telling you to turn your phone off, but actually it's secretly an advertisement for candy. It's like, oh my God, we're living in fucking, I don't know.
Brave New World.
Brave New World. Thank you. I was like, what, what like cyberpunk dystopia am I, a capitalist hellscape am I referencing? I don't know, Neuromancer or Snow Crash or what, but like
amusing ourselves to death.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Man, remember that book? Like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's like television's bad. How quaint. How incredibly quaint. It's like, oh, I love it. They're like, oh, TV's bad. You ain't seen the half of it yet. But anyway. The Curiosity Shop. It was apparently all erased except for two episodes, which are now available on Toon Tracker. Mm-hmm. So this is an amazing historical get. A window into the past to see what they thought could compete. What actually, because Sesame Street was PBS, so this was going to be the private commercial alternative to Sesame Street.
Yeah, you can really tell because of all the licensed music they're using.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of bells and whistles in this. A lot of things that, you know, they've, you know, it doesn't feel like it's as, you know, like Sesame Street always has that feeling where it's like they're kind of, you know, just barely keeping the lights on. This one feels a lot more lush. But I think there's a reason that this did not become as big as Sesame Street.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has much of the same appeal. You have kid actors in costumes, you have puppets, you have animation, you have, kind of quick cuts between things. You know, that's because the whole idea behind Sesame Street was that they were looking around and hearing kids singing commercial jingles, and they were like, you know, commercials are really good for getting kids to remember things by rote. Why don't we teach them their ABCs that way? So, but I'm not sure if the Curiosity Shop, which seems to have kind of broader ambitions, is quite the thing to use to get kids to learn. Actually, I'm not sure if it's so much about learning so much as like getting kids excited to learn.
Yeah, it doesn't feel as focused as Sesame Street. Which is, you know, Sesame Street is basically like, hey, here's the alphabet. Here's the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, you know, over and over again.
Yeah.
This one kind of like throws some random stuff at you. And the two episodes aren't really, like you said, they're not about learning. I mean, they don't really teach you anything.
They have a theme, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like I was learning anything. Mostly it just felt like they were trying to wean me off of Sesame Street and be like, this is cool, right? This is hip, right? We were the electric company before the electric company.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, the one episode, which is the first episode of the series, was basically like, the theme is music and dance. It exists. And then
we never saw that on TV before.
Yeah, never seen that on TV before. And the other episode was just like, hey, remember? Concept of memory, I guess. You know?
It didn't. And almost nothing that they put up that was included was actually relevant to the concept of memory.
No, no. It was just a bunch of, I mean, I think they had to do like, you know, they had to do what, 17 episodes of this. And so by the time they got to that one, they were like, you know what, who this was, because this literally, I think, was the last episode of the series is the remember one. So I think at that point, they're like, whatever, who cares? Just throw in whatever remainder crap we have, just throw it in. And it'll be like a clip show, I guess, for a show that's entirely clips.
It doesn't remind me of Sesame Street. What it reminds me of is the various Sesame Street clones from my childhood, like, say, Pinwheel and Eureka's Castle.
Yes. Great Space Coaster, you know, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
I would agree, and I think it's very interesting to watch this and compare it to Sesame Street, because there were a lot of those series that kind of did that kind of Sesame Street thing of blending puppets and animation and, you know, claymation and being very frenetic and kind of like jingly. And most of them are honestly very forgettable.
Yeah.
You know,
most I'd say of them that Eureka is the second best, but Eureka was kind of, I mean, famously R.L. Stine, head writer on the show, was like, it's like Sesame Street, except it makes you dumber instead of smarter.
God, R.L. Stine, what a king. Oh, man. I think the thing is, all of these series kind of, they understood what Sesame Street looks like, and they all kind of were aping that, but they didn't quite get it. And I don't know. I mean, I think watching it, I was like, it made me really realize, like, yeah, the heart and soul of Sesame Street really are the character interactions on Sesame mm-hmm. Street. You know, like not the little bits, but like the actual ones where you see the residents of Sesame Street like interacting as,
yes,
you know.
You know, it's good to have Ernie and Bert in their basement level apartment, but, it is better to have, you know, Big Bird walking around and getting a conversation with Gordon and Maria, and then Oscar comes out and contradicts them, and they have to set Big Bird right again, that kind of thing. So, you know, of course, this is now Sesame Street is so divorced from that idea that, you know, we might not even have human characters on Sesame Street soon enough, or at least not adult humans.
Wow. I shouldn't, when I say Sesame Street, yeah, I haven't watched it. I'm old, so I have not watched Sesame Street in probably like 30 years. So I don't know what is currently on Sesame Street. I'm just going by what I remember from, you know, the 80s. And yes. I'm assuming that is the golden age of Sesame Street, as Sesame Street ought to be. That was the vision. And
some would argue that it was not the golden age, because that was when all of the good Muppet performers were busy with, you know, making things like The Muppet Show and The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth.
Oh, OK. Yeah, fair. But I think like, OK, so Sesame Street, you know, 70s and 80s. That's when you're, you know, I think it is because originally the concept, as I recall, was they were like, look, this is supposed to help kids learn, give kids, you know, a head start in going into kindergarten. And we want Sesame Street to reflect the lived reality of, you know, a lot of these kids. And it's like they don't live in like, you know, little suburban enclaves. They live in the city. And they see all sorts of different people in the city. And that's kind of what Sesame Street is. You see that, like, you know, it's all the humans and monsters and Big Birds and Grouches all living together in a, you know, multi-ethnic neighborhood.
You know,
and
did you know that the Gordon that we grew up with was not the original Gordon?
Oh, my God. What happened to the original Gordon?
Well, the original Gordon was Matt Robinson, who was a consultant on like race relations for the show. He has this certain quote that I keep in mind that I think is very powerful. He says, there's a moment in every black boy's life around age 4 or 5 when he realizes for the first time that he is black. And he decides right then for the rest of his life whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And we want to make sure that as many of them as possible decide that it's a good thing. So, yeah. And he was like a local Philadelphia star who had like a talk show, and, you know, his whole career had been about, you know, about being black, about race relations. And now he had to be, you know, he had to be the father figure on this show. So he struggled with it a little bit. And then he created the character of Roosevelt Franklin, who was a huge hit, but parents didn't like him because they said he encouraged mouthing off in school. So Roosevelt Franklin kind of disappeared, and then so did Matt Robinson.
Well, you know, stupid parents' rights groups ruining things even back then.
Yeah, for real. You know, the Gordon, you know, we know is Roscoe Orman, and he's really good. But the reason he was there for almost 50 years.
I mean, that does bring up the point, though, that Sesame Street is more than just teaching kids basic, math and reading skills. It is very much about, teaching them about living in, about you know, living in society, I guess you could say.
Yeah. You know, they teach you like basic traffic safety and stuff. Don't cross the street without holding a grown-up's hand.
Yeah. And, you know, they do. I mean, they did have a little, I think. They have stuff like that. So traffic safety. I mean, obviously you get a lot of, you're learning a lot about race relations, you know, and kind of idealized America, you could say there, since we do have, you know, we have Americans of all stripes in the show. We learn Spanish in the show. There's like the, you know, so that's a thing. And I think wasn't there, you know, there was a puppet with AIDS too at one point, but maybe that wasn't the American one. I don't remember.
Yeah, that was like the South African one. There was a puppet who was HIV positive, who was, explaining, you know, the basic things about HIV that, you know, you can't catch it from someone by shaking their hand or even by kissing them.
Gotcha. Okay. So that was not in the American one.
No.
But, you know, I mean, Sesame Street, yeah, there's a lot more than just basic, yeah, like school skills. I mean, you know, I think a lot of kids probably, we have to talk about like Mr. Hooper's death, because that was probably like a lot of kids' first experience with, you know, that concept. And
one of the things that when they were doing that, they were like, kids didn't understand death. They were like, when will Grandpa be back? So they had that be something that Big Bird actually said. That's right. I remember Mr. Hooper died. When will he be back? And so there's, it's the long and painful process of realizing that, no, this person that you loved is never coming back. And that happens to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and these are reasons why none of the Sesame Street clones really can hold a candle to the original. You know, most of them aren't really trying to be the same sort of thing. They really are just trying to be like, oh, hey, here's some pretty pictures. And like, if you pick up a basic skill, man, that's great. Sure.
Yeah.
Go for it. But I think they're,
today's special kind of reached for that brass ring. They did have an episode where the guy who played Doc on Fraggle Rock showed up as an old friend of Sam, the security guard. And it was about his alcoholism and about his getting drunk at this thing they were planning on doing ended up ruining it. And Sam had to basically say, you know, well, we'll always be friends, but you got to go. You can't bring this here.
Mm. Okay. Well, I did not see that episode. So I guess today's special being a little more. Well, that was one of the earlier ones, wasn't it? I feel like that was in the 70s, too.
That was the, you know, very late 70s, early 80s. It happened.
Okay.
It happened when I was a kid, and I got super into today's special when I was like four or so.
Gotcha. I feel like it was a more sensitive portrayal of the topic than the Broomhilda alcoholism special.
Oh, boy. Ouch. I've forgotten all about that.
Yep. Yep. Well, anyway, so this is a. So that's a lot about Sesame Street. We're looking at the Curiosity Shop. And the Curiosity Shop, it's a little different. The basic premise is there's a curiosity shop, and there's some kids who visit it, and a bunch of wacky shit happens, and then the episode ends.
Pretty much. The shop itself. Yeah.
It's not really a curiosity shop. We don't really see anything for sale. It's just a weird place where like a bunch of like crazy puppets hang out.
Yeah. The puppets in this, they remind me less of Sesame Street and more of the Chuck E. Cheese Pizza Time Theater.
I was thinking very Meet the Feebles, but yes, they're extremely, a Rock of Fire Explosion.
Yeah.
And to the point that like watching this and the versions that are up on Toon Tracker are in black and white. So it really does have that feel of like cursed media, you know,
it does.
It feels like a Five Nights at Freddy's fan film.
And, you know, especially when they get to the parts with the Oogle. God.
Oh my God. The Oogle. The Oogle is one of many things in this that just they're like, well, we got to eat up some time. Here's some stuff.
Yeah, let's just watch this guy in a big platypus-like costume shuffle around and, you know, do things very slowly. Oh, and let's listen to someone noodle around on their bass while we're doing
it. Yeah, in the first one, he's got like the oogle. They cut to him when he's kind of doing whack. He's trying to like play the cymbals, but it keeps fucking up because it's music themed. And in the second one, he's doing spring cleaning. So he basically wanders into this side room that looks like a crack den. And they play video backwards. So even though he's clearly like fucking it up, it looks like he's cleaning it. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah. I mean, I don't know what that has to do with memory, but okay.
And then he puts flowers in a vase by throwing them like darts. And after the first one, you're like, haha, oh, I get it. And after the third one, you're like, oh my God, you're going to do this with every single flower, aren't you? Oh.
Yeah, that whole sequence goes, you know, Sesame Street was very good at timing and realizing like how long you could get away with stretching something out. This one, not so much. I feel like, basically, I think the thing with the Curiosity Shop is I feel like it thinks it's very clever. And
it certainly does.
Yeah, and it really wants you to know that it's clever to the point where you're kind of like, oh, okay, let's just, you know, you're really rubbing my nose into it. Wikipedia does say this was aimed at kids slightly older than Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Probably like young teenagers, which, I mean... It's weird because I mean, so I don't think young.
I don't know about young teenagers. Maybe 7 to 9.
Okay, that's probably about good. Because a lot of the dialogue in this, they use big words.
Yeah,
the vocabulary
seems words.
The vocabulary seems a little challenging for kids because they want to set up a bunch of jokes that I think the writers thought were funny, but like you know. Just okay.
Yeah. We have a character named Nostalgia and a character named Onomatopoeia.
Yeah. So Onomatopoeia, I think, speaks in sound effects at least, right?
Yes. And doesn't actually have anything to do with anything. It just sort of, you know, yells a car horn at you at the end of the theme song.
Right. There's a lot of kind of useless puppets in this, honestly.
Yeah.
We get like, well, let's go through our cast. Let's talk about the cast of the Curiosity Shop. Let's talk about these puppets.
Yeah, I guess the big bird analog would be Flip the Hippopotamus. His name was probably Flip-O-Potamus or something like that.
Oh, that makes sense. So he is he's a hippopotamus. He kind of talks like Jive.
Little bit, yeah. But I mean, it's mostly. You know, there are four voice actors on this show. One of them is Don Messick, so half the characters sound like Papa Smurf.
Yeah. And we've also got June Foray, so half of them sound like a witch.
Yeah, they're either sound like, you know, a nice witch or like Natasha. Or like Jokey Smurf.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So let's see. So we've got Flippopotamus. According to Wikipedia, he has oversized sneakers and the jive talking voice, and he's also sometimes a hand puppet, but sometimes he's a full body costume.
We didn't see him in hand puppet form. I think I only saw him as a costume.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing him as a hand puppet. But he is then there's Baron Balthazar, who is he's a guy.
A human.
He's got like he's a human. He's got a beard and he wears a little derby hat and apparently and he tells stories which are then presented like in animated form and it appears that this was originally a unrelated cartoon series called Professor Balthazar from Croatia which presumably Michael Eisner got real cheap and they just plugged into this.
Yeah, that's why it reminded me of, like, Pinwheel, because I was like, oh, this is like when they would show, you know, the Plastinauts or Chapeau Chapeau.
Yeah,
Simon in the Land of Chalk Drawings.
Yes. I guess I'm impressed that they actually built a Baron Balthazar puppet to kind of, you know, to try and make the Professor Balthazar cartoons fit better into the world of the memory shop. Sorry, the curiosity shop.
Yeah.
Because that's the most effort that they go to make anything coherent in this entire series.
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll also have to talk about these fucking Professor Balthazar cartoons, which...
Oh, Professor Balthazar was actually shown on Pinwheel. No wonder it sounded familiar.
Oh, so I'm guessing that these cartoons... Well, you know what? Let's finish talking about the puppets before we talk about Professor Balthazar. Baron Balthazar, sorry. So we've also got the Oogle. We mentioned him. He does sight gags. And we mentioned the onomatopoeia. There's also Woodrow the Groundhog. And his whole gimmick is that, like, once all the other puppets make a lot of noise, he'll start screaming, "Quiet!" Because he wants to sleep because he's a groundhog.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of puppet shows make the mistake of having assigning one joke, one puppet. And I just don't think that works a lot of the time.
No. It's a thing that it's usually they seem to think that it's a way funnier running gag than it really is.
Yeah. It's not funny to say shut up. Sorry.
No. We also get a character called Eek a Mouse, who I did not see Eek a Mouse do anything in either of these episodes.
No.
But Wikipedia says that Eek a Mouse often emerges from the wall to scream for quiet as well. So apparently they have two characters doing this exact same gag. So
Okay. One gag, two puppets. Never mind.
Now, Eek a Mouse, is that like, I feel like there's a band named Eek a Mouse, because that sounds really familiar.
Yeah, Eek a Mouse is a reggae singer. He's been around for decades.
Oh, so I assume this mouse was named after him and not vice versa.
I think it might be the other way around, but I'm not sure.
Wow. Well, if the reggae guy was like, I'm going to name myself after this forgotten Sesame Street clone. Okay. More power to you. That's kind of a king move, honestly. All right. So Eek a Mouse, we've got Nostalgia, who is an elephant, and voiced by Gene Foray.
Oh, no, Eek a Mouse, the singer took the name from the name of a racehorse he always bet on. So maybe the racehorse was named after the character from the show.
Oh my God. Do you think?
Maybe. Entirely possible.
Wow.
He started using the name Eek a Mouse in 1979. So, yeah, it would be. Huh.
Wow. What a world. Okay. So, Eek a Mouse, through a series of strange coincidences, may be named after this puppet. Okay. So, we've got Nostalgia, the elephant, who is, again, it's a June Foray voice. It's the witch voice.
It's the nice, sweet voice. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's Hermione Giraffe, who is June Foray doing the Natasha voice.
You know, I would have sworn that the name Hermione was made up for Harry Potter, but I guess it was a real thing.
I guess it's the feminine version of Herman. But Herman?
Pee-wee Hermione.
I mean, I have never met a Hermione in my entire life. And I mean, I know I've met Hermans, but like, that's only because I have German relatives, you know?
Ah. Hermans with two N's.
Yes. Exactly. Actually, yes. Two N's.
Does that mean that Pee-wee was Jewish?
No,
he had a Christmas special.
Well, you know, maybe he just had like a Hanukkah bush. He was a Jew for Jesus.
Well, no, his neighbor came over and did the Hanukkah portion of the program. So,
oh, which neighbor?
Mrs. Renee, not Mrs. Steve.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I was just thinking it would be really funny if it was like Conky or the King of Cartoons or something. You know?
Well, the dinosaur family was also celebrating Hanukkah.
Oh, good for them. Interesting. Well, it's like we got a lot of Jewish rep on Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah.
All right. So we got, so we mentioned Hermione. There's also Arthur the Aardvark, who I don't think did anything in this.
He didn't do anything. I don't think I even realized he was an aardvark. It says here that contrary to the usual stereotype, he hates ants. Now, does this mean that he hates eating them or that he like hates them the way, you know, like he reads about the financial section of the newspaper and it's like fucking ants buying up everything.
He's very racist against ants.
Yeah.
And then we have Olfactory the Bloodhound.
Kind of a clever name.
Yeah. He is he's a bloodhound. He's probably the perpetual
gold voice.
Yeah, according to this, he was voiced by Old Blank, and Wikipedia describes him as a wise bloodhound with hay fever. He does have he's one of those puppets. They give him big old jowls, so he looks pretty horrible.
Yeah,
he looks the most like something that was cobbled together from things you found in a garage. And in one of the episodes, because the first episode when he's all like talking to the kids and he's like, "Come into my cubicle," and like the kids kind of like go inside the hole that his head comes out of.
Inside.
Yeah, I was thinking like this is literally you add some VHS glitch and this would just be a creepypasta, you know? there's also Halcyon the Hyena, who is
green, but we didn't have a color version. Apparently it was filmed in color, but the only recordings are in black and white.
Wikipedia says that he has world weary eyes, but nothing else with this character. I mean, the real thing is like these puppets, there's basically on the wall, there's like a big like wall of little like cubbies, and each cubby contains a puppet, and they just kind of hang out there like a Greek chorus, and none of them really do anything of interest in this series.
Only Flip is able to like come out and dance.
Yeah, yeah. The others just kind of are there. They feel very much like a laugh-in thing where you just cut to them and they like say something, but we don't even get much of that.
They should be doing the whole thing with the locker jokes from You Can't Do That on Television, where they pop in and out and answer each other's questions.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. We get there is one puppet who is not in the cubbies, and that's Oliver Wendell Lookout.
That's not a very good pun. Oh,
I don't even get it.
Oliver Wendell Holmes was a figure in American history that you and I both well know is the namesake for Oliver Wendell Jones from Bloom County. But But I don't know what Oliver Wendell Holmes actually did. But Oliver Wendell Lookout, I think I just realized that mm-hmm. means his initials are OWL. So.
Oh, okay. Fine. All right. I mean, whatever.
You can do better than this, Chuck. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
We saw your movie. We liked it.
Yeah. This was an owl. So this is an owl dressed in flight gear. I think we see him in one of the episodes. I don't know that he was in the other.
This one is voiced by Bob Holt, who we've seen a bunch of times on our show. He was Mr. Huberbloob, among other things.
Oh, okay. And then finally we get Miss Fowler, who is described as a flower in a pot, and Wikipedia does not give a voice actress for Miss Fowler. So I don't know if they don't know who she was voiced by or if this is a silent character, because I don't think Miss Fowler appeared in either of these episodes.
No, she did appear. She was singing Hail the Sunshine, but.
Oh, did she?
But in a male voice. So I don't know.
Oh, okay. Clock went up for the Curiosity Shop for, non-traditional gender presentation then. That's cool. I guess they had a Sesame Street on that one, so I'll give them credit. Yeah. We also have, there's some other things as well.
There's a couple of live animals that don't really apply very much. There's a computer that speaks in a sort of, I am a computer kind of voice. It presents something that's like animated slideshows for the most part. about it's what a very various things use their heads for.
It's a very 70s thing where they always like, I am the smartest computer in the world. I will answer any question, like that sort of thing.
I do not make mistakes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you've seen this sort of thing. There's Hudson, who's a gravelly voiced rock who told stories of prehistory. Did we see Hudson? I don't remember seeing Hudson.
Did not see him. No.
Okay. Then Granny TV, who's a rocking antique television set who presents classic film comedies by Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, Will Rogers, or the like. So again, you know, public domain footage that they could just slip in there. So
I wonder if Charlie Chaplin was public domain at that point. You see him doing the bun dance from, you know, the one that Grandpa Simpson tried to do before the blue haired lawyer stopped him.
That's true. So actually, I guess he would not have been public domain, assuming that copyright law worked the same. Well, assuming that Charlie Chaplin or the owned his own copyrights to his own films, he was still alive at this point because he did not die until 77. So,
oh, I did not know that.
I believe he was not in good shape. He was so he probably wasn't enforcing copyright if he owned it. So who knows? again. I do not know how copyright worked in those days. I'm just assuming it was, you know, life of the creator.
You just mean he was old, but I was, you know, just imagining a, you know, couch bound, obese, Charlie Chaplin being like, turn it off. I don't want to watch it.
Yeah, boy, he really let himself go. So there's pants a couple other, we now. Get, oh, it's a real baggy pants. do you remember when they made a cartoon where there were baggy pants and the nitwits? Do you remember that one?
Baggy pants and the nitwits? That does not sound
familiar. Yeah, it was like Filmation was like, what if Charlie Chaplin was an anthropomorphic cat and we made a cartoon? And it's like, you can do that? You just, okay. I believe it was also in the 70s, so, you know.
Yeah, but, oh, God. This is the part of the 70s that Buzz warned us about.
Yeah. when the old world was dying and the new world was struggling to be born. It was a time of monsters, so. Now, we did also have in the Curiosity Shop, there's also Havemeyer, the Helping Hand. Who is...
It's basically Thing.
Yeah. And, you know, just is the guy doing, like, funny hand gestures.
Yeah.
You know?
Have Meyer helper, help her hamburger. Have Meyer makes a great meal.
Yeah. Although not as entertaining as the hamburger helper hand, to be honest.
No. I always felt like he was like had originally been part of Poppin' Fresh and then got cut off and became his own being.
like something out of a fucking Greek legend.
Yeah.
Man. But, you know, there is one last character that we haven't mentioned.
Unseen character.
He's the most important character, though, because he technically, I think, owns the Curiosity Shop.
Yeah, we never see him, but he leaves messages on a tape recorder, and he has this amazing ability to predict exactly what the kids are going to say and respond to it when he records it ahead of time.
Yeah. So anyway, these kids are like, they go to the Curiosity Shop and they talk to Mr. Jones, and he, I guess he answers questions for them, and then random stuff happens, and that's it for them.
Curiosity Shop. Come back next week for more nothing.
Yep. Now apparently there were some like interesting guest stars on the show, because we got Mr. Wizard appearing in one episode, one of the existing ones, but he was apparently in it. And Vincent Price was apparently in a Halloween episode, but you know, we don't have that one either, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's something that Sesame Street never got. They just had to do Vincent twice.
Yeah, they did get him on the Muppet Show, though.
That's true. That was one of the best episodes.
Yeah. Now, unfortunately for us, we don't have any of the two appearances by Hank Ketchum, who apparently did appear on this show.
Who presented and the first animated cartoons of Dennis, and as well as comic strips in which Dennis interacted with the kids on the show. Whoa! Boy, wouldn't that be weird to have happen when, during the Dennis the Menace movie, to have Mason Gamble turn to the screen and say, "Hey, kids from the Curiosity Shop, what should I do now?"
Yeah, I'm really kind of disappointed that we didn't get to see what that was about, you know. But anyway, unfortunately, yeah, this show, apparently that's kind of why we're talking about it. There is a comic strip connection, because many of the little vignettes in this series were actually based on comic strips. I think, like, we had now
at least four different strips.
Yeah. So Dennis the Menace, but also The Wizard of Id, Miss Peach, and then something called Big George, which I've never heard of.
Also, I believe there's a BC cartoon listed here, too.
Oh, okay. So two Johnny Hart strips. Now, in the episodes we watched, we got a Miss Peach segment, which we'll talk about, but we did not get to see any other ones, unfortunately. So, but, you know, I guess, again, they're pulling out all the stops. They really wanted to compete with Sesame Street. They were going to have all your favorite comic strip characters, like the Wizard of Id and BC, appear in this. So,
well, it was the 70s. Those were the best ones they had to offer. It was still, you know, there wasn't Heathcliff yet.
God, what a dark time.
Yeah, no Heathcliff, no Garfield, no Calvin and Hobbes. I mean, there was Peanuts, but that was its own thing. Oh, yeah. there's a Peanuts connection here, too.
Oh, is there? Oh, yes, there is, actually.
The main girl, Pamela Ferdin, was, in fact, the voice multiple times of Lucy on Peanuts specials. And you can really hear it.
Yeah, let's talk about Pam, okay?
Let's talk about Pam.
Oh my God, I hate Pam so much.
Okay, good. I was afraid that, you know, I was like, Mike either hates this person as much as I do or loves her. I'm glad we're on the same page.
So there are four kids on this show who basically go to the Curiosity Shop and experiences there. There's two boys, Gerard and Ralph. And two girls, Pam and Cindy. And Pam, oh my God, she is overacting so much in this.
Yeah, Pam is acting like she thinks she's on Barney or something. My God.
Yeah, it's so funny. I mean, it's funny for like about 5 seconds. And then it's just like, oh my God, this is the most grating thing I've ever heard. Because she like literally like, you know, another kid will say something. And she'll be like, "Well, I guess we gotta go ask Mr. Jones in the Curiosity Shop." Like, she talks like that constantly, you know.
And there's the other girl. The other girl is the only person of color on the show, and unfortunately, they only appear together in this one first episode special. Other times, it's the two boys and one girl in every other episode.
Now, that's very strange. I was wondering about that. It was like, what, you couldn't pay for two girls in an episode? What's the deal with that? They just alternated them. And I was thinking, like, oh, did you do that so that you could sell certain episodes to, like, the Southern market? Be like, don't worry, there's no black characters in this show. It's not like that integrated Sesame Street, you know?
Ooh, oh, wow. You probably hit the nail on the head there. With Michael Eisner, I wouldn't doubt it.
You know, he's that slimy little worm, always three steps ahead, you know.
Don't besmirch the name of Slimy the Worm by comparing him to Michael Eisner.
That's right. I'm sorry, Slimy. Slimy's a good worm.
He's a very good worm.
He's very good. We all love Slimy. So Pam is just, oh my God. I don't know how you would really
Pam, God.
Oh my god! I just every time she opens her mouth, I was just like, "This is a horse girl." That's the only way I can describe her. She's 100% a horse girl, and it's funny because the other character, like Cindy, is pretty. The other kids are pretty normal, I guess.
Benign, yeah. Ralph is okay. Gerard is he's a little annoying, but he's six, so
yeah. They give him a lot of the cute lines, which, you know, is like, oh boy, you know, that's an albatross. Cindy's all right, like, you know, but I do like Ralph, because half the time when they cut to him, like, I don't think it's intentional. I think it's just that he's not a very good actor. And because whenever they cut to him and he's not saying a line, he just looks like he's zoning out. And I like to think that it's because he's just completely done with Pam's bullshit. But I mean, it probably is just that he was like, oh, I don't have to say a line. OK, I'm just going to stare off into space.
If only this were higher resolution, so we could zoom in on him and see if he was, like, you know, mouthing his lines while the others were talking, so he doesn't forget them.
Yeah. He is, because when we first meet our kids, right, like, Ralph is badly playing the trumpet, and Gerard is, like, flailing around, like, yeah, he's having some sort of,
He's got quite a move there. Just do this dance that makes him fall down and get up and do it again.
Yeah. And then Cindy and Pam come along and they're like, that's not music and that's not dancing. You're doing it all wrong. And Ralph is insisting that, like, look, if I'm making music, if I'm blowing through a trumpet and Gerard is moving to the sound I'm making, that's music and dance. You know, which I kind of would be like, okay, you know what? I think Ralph wins this one.
Yeah, but you got me. Then you got him there. Yeah.
Yeah, but then Pam is like, whoa, boys! Or something like that. She's very much like, oh, these stupid boys! Whoa. Let's go ask Mr. Jones! And so they have to ask Mr. Jones about what music is.
And Mr. Jones replies in his kind of Boo Boo Bear-esque voice that music is, you know, the art of making sounds that you can dance to. I don't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mr. Jones is like, well, why don't you ask the fucking bookworm? And this is because we didn't mention the bookworm, right?
Yes. These are new animated characters for the show. Yes. Created by Chuck Jones himself.
Chuck Jones. So it's the Professor S.I. Trivia. I don't get it.
I don't either. I thought it was like S.A. If it was S.A. Trivia, that would be like an essay. But no, S.I. Trivia? Hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it. But he's basically a worm with glasses. So he looks like that guy that Captain Marvel fights.
Yeah, Mr. Mind.
You know, so he's like, when he's not busy, like, fighting the big cheese, the big red cheese, he's like he sits in his dictionary, and basically someone will say a word on the show and he will read you the dictionary definition. So great character.
Yeah,
I guess.
Webster's dictionary defines excellence as the quality of being excellent.
Yes. So he's like every college English freshman English student. He's like, actually, the dictionary is a land of contrasts. we also get a second animated character, Monsieur Cuckoo, who is a cuckoo clock. And
he tries to eat the bookworm and fails. Yeah.
Yeah, that's his thing. Is like he tries to eat the bookworm and doesn't. He's kind of like another one of those characters who pops in to tell a joke, but he doesn't really tell jokes. He just says his catchphrase, which is, that's right. And and I think like Pam is like, Monsieur Cuckoo is cuckoo. It's like, oh my god, stop.
Yeah. Did you have to say it like it was the most clever thing ever?
She is really like Pam really believes in these lines.
Yeah. You know? She's you can't say she's not trying, you know. She is selling. Like, the only thing wrong with Gerard is that he's so stupid.
That's probably my favorite Pam line, though.
It's pretty memorable.
Yeah, it's great because she says, because there's a part where Pam says that because that's when Gerard is trying to remember something. And nobody in the curiosity shop is helping because they're basically all just being like, well, you say you forgot something. Well, is it this random thing? It's like, no, it's never that random thing that you just brought up. Because and that's when Pam says, yeah, the only problem that he has is he's so stupid. And Mr. Jones on the tape recorder is like, Pam, whoa. Dial it back a little. You're like as mean as Marcia. And then Ralph does this thing where I don't know what he's trying to communicate, but like, cause he kind of does, cause he starts kind of like waving his arms in this, like, again, this gesture of just complete resignation. And he just was like, yeah, Marcia. Like he's pretending to know what Mr. Jones is talking about just because he's so pissed at Pam, but he has no clue what's happening. He just I'm not sure what's happening in this bit, but then know. Pam is all
kind of delighted by this character who is, absolutely committed to backing up a sentiment that he knows nothing about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's like, cause like, I think we've all been in that situation where someone's pissing you off. So when someone finds someone else, like kind of, tells them off, you're just going to agree with the teller off no matter what they're saying, even if you have no clue what they're talking about. You know, it's a bitch eating crackers kind of situation here. but yeah, I mean, clearly Ralph has no clue either who Marcia is. Pam is all like, fine, who's Marcia? And Mr. Jones explains, it's like, Marcia from Miss Peach, because there's a character in Miss Peach named Marcia who's very mean. You know, Miss Peach, that famous comic strip that we all are intimately familiar with. So much so that you would drop the names of characters in casual conversation. Maybe that was the case. Miss Peach. Well, you know, Mel Lazarus, the famous Mensa person. Top in their field.
God, can you imagine if this had run long enough for there to be Dilbert cartoons?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Just imagine, like, yeah, because Pam is, like, saying, like, some... And Pam is mouthing off. Mr. Jones is like, wow, Marcia. Wow, Pam, dial it back. You're just like when Dilbert had a cum rocket shoot up his ass. And Ralph would be like, yeah, cum rocket. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what it's like. And then Pam would be like, all right, what cum rocket went up my ass? And then Mr. Jones can explain. It's like when Dilbert shot a rocket through a cow and a monkey and an alien and a robot and a hillbilly, and then it went back up his ass and impregnated him with anal babies, and that turned him into a woman, which is very, very funny. And then the series ended. Anyway, Scott Adams, very normal guy.
And then they could ask Gerard, is that what you're trying to remember? He'd be like, oh yeah, that was it.
That was exactly
that's what it. My mother told me, like, to remember.
my mother told me to remember the whole sequence of all the fathers of Dilbert's baby. So, oh my God. So, so then we get, but that sets up, there's a Miss Peach cartoon, and it's
it's more like a bunch of Miss Peach strips.
Yeah, it's because it starts out being kind of about how Marcia is mean, but then it kind of ends up being this unrelated joke about, like, one of the other students blocking the principal from getting in his office, and then it gets to lollipops. So it's like, okay, these are just random things now. I will say it's interesting seeing Miss Peach animated, because when we saw them last time, it was puppets.
Yeah. This part is not animated by Chuck Jones. It's animated by another regular of ours, Abe Levitow, who was co-director on The Phantom Tollbooth and was the director of Shinbone Alley. So, and you can you can really... I think he was kind of straining against the incredibly simple designs of the Miss Peach characters, because sometimes their eyes get really detailed.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's clearly a lot of effort put into this, because there is so much emoting in these very simple cartoon characters.
Yeah,
it's kind of unfortunate that you know it's all in the service of Miss Peach punchlines, because you know. They're jokes, you know.
Yeah, they are in fact jokes. You can't you can't say that there isn't a punchline, but you know, it's just. But the scene where, what's his name? The kid is trying to block Mr. Grimace from getting into his office, and Mr. Grimace starts shaking and sweating. And then it cuts to Marsha and says, "That was the day Mr. Grimace learned real fear." And
yeah,
I really don't think that that the Mel Lazarus would have drawn it that way himself.
No. They put like a lot more effort into this. So, you know, good for Levitow, because you know, he's bringing his A game here. I mean, that is the thing, is like, I have to say the animation is like really well done in the Miss Peach segment.
Yeah, it's better than most of the animation on Sesame Street.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like the animation in this, in the Curiosity Shop in general, is good. The bookworm looks really good. He's just, none of this is very interesting is the problem. Yeah. You know,
The Balthazar parts are the best, I would say. Those.
Hey, this is Mike talking. We spoke so much about Curiosity Shop that we're cutting this into two episodes. So join us next week for our conclusion about the Curiosity Shop.